Wow, so I am really happy for the magic of recording and, you know, not having to do everything live, because right now, I'm on a boat.
You're on a boat?
I'm on a boat.
Do you have your flippy floppies?
Actually, no, I was offered flippy floppies, but I always find they are way too small for my feet. I have enormously wide feet.
Okay, moving on! Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Reserve Pool. This is episode 59, and we are a podcast about Dice Masters, and more importantly, all of the people who love to play it. And of course, this episode and the last episode, we are focusing very much on those people, because we want to talk about building up your local scene and running events. It is those local games that mean the most to the success of Dice Masters and us being able to have wonderful things like Worlds and a more competitive and robust scene as a whole. So here to talk about that with me, as he is every week, is Evan. Hello, Evan.
Hi, I'm Evan, and I think that people who like Dice Masters are the most wonderful people of all.
And we're buttering you up a lot.
Indeed.
Yes.
Song references.
Yes. People who play Dice Masters. I'm not going to do that anymore. All right. But so let's dig into the Dice Masters conversation, because I had one for this topic. It's one we've touched on briefly before that came up at my recent OP event. But I'm curious if anything new has come up for you in this way. And I'm talking, of course, about those times, as is, you know, going to happen with dice from, you know, time to time, that the die just rolled energy turn after turn after turn, reroll after reroll, energy, never getting that character, maybe a crucial die. Anything recent in that sort of sense, Evan, and did it screw you up completely?
I don't think I'll need to go into too much detail, but it'll probably help if you imagine me shaking my fist at the sky when I say this. Beholder!
Yep. So I would imagine then that you were playing Apologies in advance, you couldn't get the Beholder out, and it probably messed you up pretty bad.
I think it was the one turn I didn't get it, and I managed to get it back like a turn or so later, and it worked, and I was okay. But then at a very critical point, it decided not to come out, and that pretty much cost me the game.
Yeah, you know, that's a team that can be dangerous, and when it works, it works. But man, that... when you can't get that Beholder, and it's not an easy thing because it is a 7-cost character and you're not going to be able to buy too many of those in a game.
Yep.
When you can't get that Beholder, good luck. Good night, nurse.
Indeed.
Yes. For me, it was at our DC hybrid constructed, and I had my Red Tornado. I was running Bolts, of course. I had my Red Tornado on that team, the uncommon who lets you filter those sidekicks through the bag faster. If I draw three or more sidekicks on my clear and draw step, I can move those sidekicks to used and draw four more dice. Awesome. It helps the efficiency of my team greatly. Helps a whole lot more when he's actually on the field doing that for me. I went 5 turns in a row where he came up energy. When he finally... luckily, it did not cost me the game. I still was able to mess around with my cheetahs and whatever else enough. By the time I finally did get him onto the board, I didn't even get to use his ability. He was just part of, like, my lethal damage that I was able to swing for. So in that sense, I guess he came up when it really mattered. But, yeah, I mean, it definitely made the game a lot more difficult for me. I was playing about as well as I could without him, and I had an edge. I did. But my opponent was using the OP Constantine and going for some incidental life gain against my Cheetah, who did some incidental damage.
So you go up one, and then down one, and then up one, and then down one, and then up one.
Yes. And that made it pretty darn difficult. So, Red Tornado, you jerk. And, like, I think at one point I kind of mock shouted at the die, like, what are you doing to me?
It didn't help. Only serious.
Yeah. Red Tornado. All right, well, enough about my hatred of that Red Tornado die. So last week, we talked a whole lot about building your local scene. Like, how do you find other players? How do you get your store to be on board and everything else? Like, just getting that robust, healthy scene. So today, we're going to talk about what I think a lot of us would say is the focal point for a lot of these scenes, and that's holding the organized play events. In whatever form you're doing them, whether you're actually using the OP kits or you're doing pack prizes or some combination of whatever, OP events. So this guide is not necessarily step-by-step. I think last week was sort of step-by-step because there were certain things you have to do well before you can move on to the next. This is chronological. I think there are some things you want to decide, like, at the beginning when you're first planning the event that we won't talk about until the very end. But we're going to just sort of talk about the event chronologically and different things that you want to think about, you know, as you're going here. And we're also going to assume you've chosen a format for the event, like, you know, it's going to be draft or constructed or whatever else. And we also are going to assume, a lot of assumptions here, that you have run some kind of event in the past for a game or that your store is a good resource for how to do some of the basic setup that's the norm for every event. I mean, we could talk about having, like, the numbered table locations and different things like that, but that goes into some of the basics. And guarantee, if you are a new person at running an event, you're going to have seen what other people do, or you're going to have a good resource in the folks at your store who can help you set all of that kind of stuff up. So, Evan, at this point, I've had the opportunity to run two different events. How about you? I think you indicated that somebody else has been acting as TO at your scene.
Yes, I am not the top banana at my scene.
Fair enough. But you, of course, you kind of get that other perspective. You get to see from that outside view, from being at Nationals or being, you know, a part of your scene, you see kind of how they're run and the other perspective of it as well. So we can kind of get the player perspective here in this conversation as well.
Right.
So I would say the first thing is scheduling. A registration time is important because people will otherwise be late. So what I'm saying is if your event starts at 12, make sure that it's known that registration is from 11 to 12.
Right, yeah.
Like have an expectation, you know, 12, registration 11 to 12, pairings announced 12:15.
Right. We actually sort of don't do that.
Oh.
We tend to say the event is at this time, and then we're a little flexible on it because it's actually a little early.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually one of the probably the worst defender of this. That you know, the event starts. It's, you know, the event we'd like to start at 6:30, and I usually actually can't make it until about 7. So
okay, so you're doing weeknights.
Yes, we're doing weeknights.
Okay,
so
we've primarily done Saturday afternoons. The big thing for us, I think, is that. The amount of players that we've got and some of the things that the stores try to do to help us enhance the events, like we've been able to do some top four cuts and things like that at these events, and which is nice because it adds to the legitimacy. It's a bigger thing because we have more rounds, but that also means it's taking more time. And that's especially meaningful when you're talking like the hybrid. The draft, I don't think we'll do that ever again. Have two pods and then a playoff between the pods. It was just a long day.
Right.
But constructed, that's pretty easy. But I think you do want to set some pretty clear guidelines because otherwise you're going to have somebody who's running in at like 12:16 and now you have to wait for them to fill out their team sheet or whatever else, or the draft can't start without them or however you're doing it. You know, it depends. If it's a draft, obviously your first pairings are not going to be announced that quickly. But you have to have an idea of when you're starting to open packs. There just has to be a drop dead time.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think they generally take it if I'm, you know, I at least try to tell them, oh, yes, I can't make it or I'll be a little late. And then if there's issues, because sometimes I say, oh, I'll be a little late. And then there's traffic, so I'm even later, which I feel terrible about. But.
Right. Well, I think it's mostly just getting people to take it seriously. You know, last event we had, somebody was running late. There was some bad traffic. But a friend of his was already there, filled out the team sheet. He knew what his team was going to be, filled out the team sheet for him. So by the time he walked in, he just had to get his cards out and we went.
Right.
So that worked. That was not too bad. But I think it is just kind of a little bit of accountability. And you don't want to be a jerk about it or anything like that. But you do have to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, if we're literally just waiting for you, then you are being a bit of... you're not being very...
considerate.
Yeah, thank you. you're not being very considerate of the time of other people here, because, you know, somebody might have something they have to get to that evening or whatever else. Yeah. So I think having the idea that there's a registration time to get there beforehand is important. Yeah. I kind of come from that band mentality in school, and anybody who is in a marching band knows early is on time is late.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely an argument to do that. I think you might need to relent a little on that on week if you're going to have weekday events. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah, and it depends on your scene in your store. If it's a closer-knit scene, it's only a few people at the beginning or whatever else, you know, you can do that. Or if everybody's saying, hey, you know, no worries about the time, but, you know, then that's fine too. But if you make it known well enough in advance, and people can come up with those kinds of accommodations. Again, not saying you'd be a jerk about it, but you do kind of have to have that expectation. Plus, with scheduling, make sure it's known well in advance, you know, that this is happening, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks out. Like we said last week, be the cheerleader for your store.
Right.
Yeah. And that kind of brings us right into advertising for the event. There are so many...
Merchandising.
Where the real money for the movie's made.
Right.
Spaceballs, the flamethrower. Oh,
indeed.
Boy. I'm keeping that in. Yeah, so advertise for the event. Make sure people know that it's coming. There are so many ways you can do that, from the very basic, like some posters in your store. There's your Facebook group, right? You should already have a Facebook group set up for your local scene. You know, the Small Town USA Dice Masters scene. That's your Facebook group. Talk about stuff in there. There's, of course, the Facebook group for your store, or however they do sign-ups for events ahead of time, however they pump those events. You should have some information up there as well. And then, of course, there's the WizKids event system. Now, I'm a big proponent of using the WizKids event system. Evan, have you guys been using it over at your store?
Yes.
Good.
It's actually something... we actually don't get involved with it a lot. We have our ID, and then the organizer puts stuff in.
That's enough. But if it's on there, that kind of helps other people know about it. Your people in your local scene, you assume they're going to know about the event because you're talking to them. You have all these different little inroads into their day-to-day lives. WizKids event system is how somebody who doesn't know is going to find it. Or maybe there's somebody who's, like, traveling through, they're on vacation, and they have a free slot on a Saturday afternoon, and, like, hey, I can go play some Dice Masters here. I mean, that's not actually the craziest thing in the whole wide world. Somebody might do that. It's a good system, and I recommend it for a few reasons. The first is some of the achievements and different things are nice to get for your own players and stuff like that. You can do the guilds and whatnot, which I actually have not delved into at all. It's nice for the store because then the store shows WizKids that they are an active participant in WizKids organized play events, and that can, who knows if that's a benefit for them for the future. We don't know what WizKids has in store, but there may be some things that they will do for nationals events based on the leaderboards. Like, basically, if you want achievements, you can get that on there. If you want to track your record, you can do that. If you want to have, like, points and look at yourself on the national world leaderboard, you can do that, too. Plus, you can show, as we do every Sunday night, you can show, look, here's all these local events. Maybe you can be, like, the only one in the area. At least for a while. You want to try and get some other stores on board too, but, you know, be the destination. But nobody's going to know that you're the destination if they can't see, so I definitely recommend using the WizKids event system.
Right.
The other thing with that, I would say make the rules very clear. For example, like WizKids event system, when we put up for hybrid, I think still had references of rules and cards and other things that were from Avengers versus X-Men. it doesn't always translate perfectly, and I haven't seen it all, but I suspect that there's, like, what type of event is it? It's this, and then WizKids kind of, like, will just post up, like, the pre-done rules text for it. So, make sure that any tweaks get up on your store page. I understand, too, there's a house rule section on the WizKids event system, so make sure that you check that out and just kind of really dig into that with your store folks or talk to them about it. If you get listed as a volunteer with the store, you can do some stuff with creating and running and maintaining events as well, not just your store. So, like, I see all of Mr. Nice Guy's events that they do. You know, if they have some HeroClix things going on, I get to see the store level achievements and whatnot as well because I'm a volunteer for their store. But yeah, just make the rules very clear. Oh, and Make sure it's listed properly so it counts for folks' WizKids event system credit. If it's not like a new event or like an OP, it might not actually count towards the points for the leaderboard or for achievements and whatever else. So make sure that you're cognizant of that too, so that people who are looking more at the how can I win stuff, because there are people like that. There are all kinds. Some people are going to want to win. Some people will love the achievements. Some people won't care about it at all. And that's okay too. But make sure it's listed properly.
Right. Because this way they'll have a nice uniform, like this is what their win-loss sets are across the board.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, myself, I'm not a huge fan of the fact that, like, I can go on there and there's my win-loss stats and there's the leaderboard and whatever else. I know that some people love that. It's there. I'm aware of it. I'm conscious of it. I'm happy when I do well, but I don't want to... I'm not going to do too well if I just compare myself to other people all the time. I got to play as well as I can. And some of that stuff I worry will just take some people completely out of it. Like, they'll just start looking at that and going for winning and losing some of the fun. So just use it well. With great power comes great responsibility. But I think it's a great tool for advertising to get people who you don't already have.
Right.
Because in Dice Masters it says, go to WizKids event system and look for events. And if yours isn't in there, a new player's not coming to you.
Absolutely.
So... yep. Anything else for the ramp-up to the event that you see here, Evan, before we kind of talk about the day of the event itself?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, I think as long as you have the format...
I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Yeah, the format, the scheduling, and some advertisement out there, you're pretty well set. So let's get into the day of the event. First thing, this goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway, get to the store early. I'm speaking specifically to the tournament organizers, but everybody else... you know, it's not a bad idea. I know that I'm a fan of it. The more people are there early, the happier I am, because now I don't have to worry about how many people do we have. There are certain things we determine, like how many people are going to be there determines, like, the amount of pack prizes that we're going to have, because we divvy up pack prizes based on, like, a portion of the registration cost. So more people means more pack prizes that we can split up. It also helps us determine how many rounds of Swiss. Are we going to do a cut to top 4 or not, depending on the event? Or does it need to be a cut to top 8? Are we just doing a top 2 because it's really tiny? Like, how are we doing this? A lot of the event things can depend on who actually shows up. And to be able to make those decisions quickly and know immediately, oh, geez, we have more than 16. We have to do at least 4 rounds of Swiss is pretty clutch. So I need to know that I need to know that as in advance as possible. So I like early. But you need to be there early anyway because you're organizing things.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're going to be running the event, you need to not show up 5 minutes beforehand. You want to show up 15 minutes, half an hour beforehand, if at all possible.
Yeah. You absolutely should. And if you can, at least kind of talk with the store owner. Like, that goes back kind of to the relationship with the store and them knowing and liking and trusting you that, you know, you will do what's right with the piece of their reputation that they have given you. You know?
Yeah.
So being there early is just good for logistics, because and people are going to come and they're going to have questions and you got to be there. I would say also you got to make it clear to players who the rules resources are. You know, at our events, probably there's nobody yet in the area who's quite as up on the rules as I am, and certainly I make my share of mistakes as well. But I know that there are a few others who have played long term who can answer some things about rules or format. So I know I can point to Matt or Brandon or my wife as people who have played and have a decent understanding of the rules in most cases. So that if there's a question, you know, they can ask, and if they're not sure, they know they can confer with me. I have played in all of our events so far. Nobody's had a problem with it. I guess it's possible there are people who wouldn't like you making rulings on things. So you just do have to tread carefully there. We haven't had a problem with it, but again, we've built our scene up to be like, let's have a whole bunch of fun playing this. Let's make sure everybody enjoys themselves more than anything else, because that's just how you build a friendly scene.
Right.
How's the rules situation been handled at your store?
They tend to look at the people who have more experience. I know I get kind of tapped for what it seems very frequently what I say is what people accept. But, which I'm not sure if I'm altogether cool, because with, because honestly, sometimes I'm not quite as up on the rules as I'd like to be, and sometimes we get new things that I'd be like, I really wish I had an official word on how this works.
Mm-hmm.
But, I do my best. I think as long as the rules are going to be somewhat consistent, it's okay.
And that's true. I think in general what I have said to everybody beforehand, and I remind them this at the beginning of each event, it's the same thing the judges said to us at Nationals and Worlds. Generally, if there are two interpretations and one seems like really overpowered compared to the other, then I'm going with the one that seems less overpowered. Right. And, you know, that might not be 100% the perfect way to do it, because maybe it's sort of splitting the difference, or maybe there's something fuzzy that we missed in there. But in general, I'm going to go with that way, because that's the way that's more likely. So just kind of make it clear how some of those rulings are going to work beforehand. And I think generally everybody will be okay with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But people have to know who those people are, who those resources are. Of course, use the rules forums for help if you get in a jam with something you're not completely familiar with. But I think a lot of the questions we get end up dealing with things like timing and stuff like that. We have some players who are very used to Magic and the stack, and like there being a gazillion opportunities during your turn where you can make a legal play. And in our game, you only have a couple of those opportunities. There's no end step in Dice Masters.
Right, absolutely.
So, yeah. I would also say team sheets are big, and you should use them, whether you're doing draft or really anything. Have you guys been using team sheets at your events, Evan?
Yes, in general. I think we actually didn't use them last time, which I was a little surprised by, but yeah, usually we use them.
Okay. I'm a big fan as well. I think they contribute to fairness. You can kind of sit down, check the person's team sheet across from you, verify that they didn't screw anything up. Maybe they made a mistake and it's like, oh man, you just saved me because I forgot to put, like, I put the wrong dice count down or something and now you saved me. Or maybe, you know, there's something they didn't realize where, like, Patch, I've seen many people do this. I almost did it. Charlie did it at Nationals. Patch is max two dice. And you think it's three or four, and somebody puts three or four, they don't even think about it because there aren't a ton of things that have dice limitations like that.
Yeah,
but they are
true.
Out there. So that can kind of, if you're paying attention to Yu-Gi-Oh! Serial numbers, that's a thing too. We haven't paid as much attention to that in our events.
Yeah, there hasn't been tons of attention given to that.
Yeah.
But it's a thing.
That's true. So one, fairness. Two, organization. I use team sheets very similar to what we use at Nationals. People mark their wins. We get the team sheets out each round. So then, like, if I announce the pairings, we've randomized the sheets. We pull them off the top. Okay, this person and this person, table one. And then they can double-check each other's teams. At the end, they can mark who won and who lost. And then I can sort those back out into piles, and they really just help me. Other people will use separate small sheets for that, or they'll feed it into a computer or whatever else. That's just kind of how it's worked for us. It's been pretty easy to take those team sheets and help us keep organized by having them.
Right.
And also posterity. We can share, hey, this team won, and now I can post the whole thing up here because I know what it was. I have all the team sheets for every event that we've run so far, and that way if we have questions or we want to just refer back to it or whatever else, we can post up the winning teams. We can kind of show off our local scene. It all comes down to making it a big deal. Like, it's not just another weekly event or another monthly OP event or however you're doing it. It's like, hey, we have this Dice Masters event, and man, here's what won, and maybe even here's some video, and we'll get to that in a second. Maybe here's some video of the matches. Like, making it matter is so big.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the team sheets will help you do that just by, you know, making a legacy. I was going to say, there's people remember the Apologies in Advance team I've been using, but it has nothing to do with team sheets.
Oh. We'll kind of go back into making a legacy and like kind of a history for your, for what your scene has like done or accomplished or seen. What you've seen at the scene. Because I liked what you said about the legacy, and I'd like to cut something right back in after that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything relevant to my scene.
Well, just in general, like it's establishing a legacy for your scene, so you can see like what's been successful over time or how people have evolved in their quality of play.
Yeah, and if you can keep records up, I don't know if you'll necessarily, like, I don't know if people are necessarily going to be comfortable with that, but if you do, and, you know, people, and you make the sheets publicly available, or if you just have, like, a tournament log of some sort, people can see not just, you know, where they stand, but how people are getting better, what teams are winning. Maybe that'll inform them when they start doing Constructed. Oh, I know, you know, maybe it's not necessarily the best thing, but oh, I know that guy likes to favor, you know, apologies in advance, so I'll run a really strong bomb team and hopefully beat him to the punch.
Yeah, because none of that information is hidden at all, right. So, I mean, you can see it there, you can know that it happened, and certainly we know everything that did well at Worlds, and when we were doing the qualifiers, we knew what did well with the qualifiers, because that events, those events were right there, and we saw it happen in real time. So, yeah, I mean, you can see how people are constructing teams better over time, and that might be cool for somebody to see their own progression, like they started, like, man, what was I thinking? I had this character on my team, and I did this, and I didn't have any ramp. And now, like, look at what I'm doing. Like, they can really start to see a good linear progression and how they're improving as a player. I think just from month one to month two of our events, I saw a significant upgrade in the level of play, and I was so happy about that. You know, to start to see people winning a little more consistency or show up with decks that were tuned a little bit better, even if they didn't find the success that they wanted. That was really cool to see. So having a means of tracking that just kind of adds a little more of history to your scene. It's not just showing up and playing. It's like, hey, we do this every week, and we're kind of establishing ourselves. And then we're going to kind of establish the way that we're going to bump each other off here, too. Like, oh, man, in this unlimited constructed tournament, this guy did this, and now, you know, some people are going to bring that because it was successful, and then other people are going to bring hate for that, and then other people are going to bring hate for that hate. And that's how you build a meta. It's so awesome. And it's right. That easy.
A local meta.
Yep. So video. I recommend a feature table if you can do it. It doesn't just have to be for big matches. There are so many reasons why. One, ownership in the scene. Players can go on and see themselves playing, and that's pretty darn cool. Two, publicity for your scene. Again, outside of the general area. Oh, man. Hey, I know these guys. They're playing. I met, you know, I've seen them play online or whatever else. I've seen this happen. For three, you can kind of analyze your own play, or your players can analyze each other's play and kind of see, like, oh, man, I made a bad misplay there. I see what I should have done. Or I shouldn't have rerolled that die. That could have gone differently. And they can kind of analyze a little bit for next time and, again, become better players. I mean, so many reasons to do it, and it's not that hard.
Yeah.
I recommend, Evan, I think, did you end up getting that same webcam?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I like the Logitech C920. It's what I have. It's not perfect, but it's pretty darn good. And I have a $20 Amazon Basics tripod. And they work together very well. The C920 works perfectly on a tripod. I also did grab a 9-foot extension cable for USB extension cable for it. But all we do is, I've had some trouble getting my Twitch stuff to work. I get some weird audio lag. So I've just been recording it into QuickTime using the movie recording feature, and it looks just fine.
Fair enough.
So, yeah, I mean, it's not hard. I bring a laptop, they run an extension cord, I hook it up, and I start and end each game. And that's it. It doesn't take a lot of doing to monitor it. I just, as soon as we're about to roll off, or, like, see who goes first, I hit record, they play, and then it's done, and I stop it and save it. Very simple. The store's been very accommodating of it. And, again, that's another way to publicize your events. Like, hey, look at what we're doing. Let's get some more people in here.
Yep.
Not everybody does that stuff, too. You know, we've been there when... Go ahead.
Yeah, oh, you do have to have, like, tables for it. I think one of the big problems at my store, we just don't have the tables to have a separate table or a separate, like, you know, a featured table. At best, we could have, like, one side of the table, but space is already kind of tight, so It makes it hard.
What we found that you can do is it takes up, like, a slot. So if you're doing, like table 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like, where you just have, like, the right. two-sided dividers, table 1 is the feature table. Table 2 is actually where the equipment sits. And then table 3 is actually the next playable table. So, I mean, we do have the space where I can sit the tripod on the floor so I don't get any kind of table stutter, and it's just sort of right over the play area. But you can set it up. You just have to know that you're going to get a little bit of jiggliness here and there. You can set it up on the table, and we've had success doing that. You just make one leg of the tripod a little longer than the other so that it goes, and then put a counterweight on it so it goes over the area. And right. then all you've really done is take up one play slot, and not really, it doesn't require a huge footprint to do. So just an idea. I don't know if that would work for you or not, but I do like being able to do it because it adds an air of big time to the event. You know, not a ton of events bother with feature tables. The fact that we are in there while Magic has, like, store-level stuff going on, and none of them have bothered with that, which is fine. They know their scene. It's done. You know, Magic is pretty well established. It's like, oh, look at what they're doing over there. Like, we look like we're doing something a little more important because we have the setup to be that way.
You've got the video going.
Yeah. Like, we got the tripod on this. Like, something that must matter is happening. And then it's like, oh, it's just another weekly, bi-weekly store-level thing? Oh, wow, that's awesome. Like, we're taking that kind of time and care.
Right. This, you know, this isn't just a thing we do for, you know, once in a while. We do this every time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's serious, and that's cool. So.
Dice Masters, serious business.
Mm-hmm. But I think those are the biggest things about running the event, just knowing your rules, resources, you know, using those team sheets, video, and just otherwise sticking to the format and the time. Make sure you don't start the time until everybody's actually set up. This takes a little bit longer to do than to just shuffle a deck and go. You do have to get your playmat there, get your team back out, allocate your dice. We had some problems the first time where the people were, like, starting as soon as the round started. I'm like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. You need to wait on starting that timer.
Right.
And that's worked well. But I think the day of the event, those are some basic things you can do to just keep it running smoothly. Try and answer a whole bunch of questions beforehand. Just the best thing you can do in any situation at the beginning of one of these events or at the beginning of anything is to say, here's what's about to happen. And then it happens. And now everybody has an expectation. It's pretty much going to go according to plan. Just, you know, always kind of keep that air of, yeah, I know what's coming next because we have this planned.
Right.
So then the next thing is play Dice Masters. That's easy. That's so easy. Play Dice Masters. We know how to do that. Yep. I don't think we need to cover that.
I hope if you're listening to this podcast, you do, or at least you're on the way to.
Or on the path to it. If you're listening to this podcast and you've never heard of Dice Masters, I'd like to hear from you.
Yes.
Because I'm really confused. So mailbag@thereservepool.com, please let me know.
Maybe they thought it was like, if you're looking to have a pool built in your backyard, you know,
and
for storing water, or a pool of reserve.
Oh, yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'd like to hear from you. Yes. Prize support is the final thing. I would say try to go for more than just the organized play cards.
Yeah, I mean, we mostly do just the organized play at our establishment, mm-hmm. but there's definitely, if you can do some stuff to sweeten the pot, that's great. I know not everybody can.
We've done pack prizes, and actually it's kind of worked out pretty well for us because two times in a row we've gotten pack prizes. I've pulled a super rare. There was the first event where I pulled a Sarina, and then the second event where I pulled a Black Widow. Or excuse me, that is a Black Widow.
That is a Sarina.
Where I pulled a Catwoman. So that's kind of worked out pretty darn well.
Yep.
But yeah, I like pack prizes, and you just have to work that stuff out with your store owner. Our people look at it and say, okay, the event costs this much. We have a little bit for our overhead, a little bit for the fact that we bought these OP kits. By the way, the OP kits are really not expensive at all.
I believe $6. So.
Something like that. They're not much. So we have a little bit for future prize support. We have a little bit for our own overhead. And then basically the rest of it, they're just saying, okay, that leaves us an extra $4 or $5 per player. Okay, times the amount of players, that's how many pack prizes we're going to divvy up between the top four. And that's really cool. That's meant that you're playing for something a little more than just a card. Some people will do it. They'll just divvy it out and give out the money for the folks who, at various tiers for the folks who won that would equal the pack prizes. But, in general, I think the pack prizes are a fine way to do it. that's another way of moving just a little bit of product and building some goodwill for the store.
Right. Yeah, definitely go for that if it's an option.
Yeah, and you just have to talk to your owner. And the discussions that will come from that also will help to determine the entry fee for the event. You could also do special unofficial promo cards, which is something that some folks have been trying out. Playmats. Custom playmats are not that hard or expensive to make. In fact, your store may have a resource to get some stuff printed. I know mine does. Dice bags. You could make those if you really wanted to get into it. Shirts. I don't know. There's so many options. Just talk to your store owner, and again, the things that come out of that are going to help determine, you know, what's the entry fee, how is this going to look, what are some of the prizes. And the more that you can do that way to be unique, again, that just helps create more of an identity for your scene.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, we unfortunately, fortunately, settle on more of a slightly looser, it's not a per event fee, but it's a sort of subscription.
Yeah.
But well, I think that also sort of precluded the pack prizes per event. Instead, it's just you're encouraged to buy some packs every time you play it. Well, assuming right. You're not doing a draft.
But then you end up like the store gets their end covered in terms of the OP cards and whatever right. else. You know, you guys get your cards and you're probably spending a little less per event than other places might who do have like, you know, a $10-$15 fee depending on what the event itself is.
Right.
You know, but really, like, be cognizant too, like, hey, we're doing Unlimited Constructed this week. Well, there's absolutely nothing you need to purchase for that. There's no, like, it's not like $10 or $15, but like that's 12 boosters plus prize support or something. This is like just what it is. So that could even be $5 and it's all gravy. That's all going to pack prizes into the store. You know, you just have to look at how is it going to be set up. And that kind of gives you the opportunity to explore out from there. So be creative with those. If you've had some creative prize support ideas, please let us know. We're eager to hear about it. Really, the most important thing that can happen from these last couple of episodes is spurring conversation. The more good ideas that we can take from each other's local stores and local scenes and transplant into our own, that's going to mean that everything is going to be stronger across the board. And it's going to mean that, you know, I could be randomly in your city in a weekend and go to your event and have just as awesome an experience as I have at my own store and vice versa. And that's very important.
Yes, no, definitely.
All right, so yes, please do share those ideas with us. We want to hear from you on the forums. mailbag@thereservepool.com is another way. Please follow us on Twitter @thereservepool. You can also like our Facebook page. We are there. And we are also, of course, distributed through iTunes, among many other podcatching services. So please leave us some reviews on iTunes. We greatly appreciate it. It helps us get the word out there and helps spread visibility. So, yeah, Evan, anything you'd like to say about events?
I think that the most important thing, no matter how you organize it or what prizes you give or how you're hyping it or how you're running it, is that you need to make sure everyone has fun.
Spot on. I could not have said it better myself.
That's the most important thing. And I think as long as you keep that in mind and make that your focus, everything else will fall into place.
That's true. And, you know, I'm sharing things that I found to be best practices for my store. That doesn't mean they're going to work perfectly there at your place. But
right.
By sharing ideas, that's the only way that we're going to know. Keeping the dialogue open and understanding, hey, you know, something might work beautifully for you that doesn't work for me and vice versa. As long as your players are enjoying themselves and they keep coming back for more and they bring a friend here and there and teach them the game, that's it. That's it right there. And then, you know, next year when it comes time for Nationals, it's not, you know, one or two of you heading down to Baltimore for some games. You know, you're bringing a whole contingent, and that's awesome.
Right. So, if you have to rent a van because everyone made it to everyone wants to go to Nationals, you're doing it right, man.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening another week. This is Dave.
This is Evan.
And this has been The Reserve Pool. We'll see you again next time.
Bye, everybody.
That's all, folks. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to episode 59 of the Reserve Pool. This is of course. Oh, horse is a horse, of course.
Indeed.